Do you want to talk about how you're feeling right now?
Oh, so many questions. What does this mean? What do I do?
Go on! Tell them what you think!
I liked it.
I think your calculations may have been off.
I think it's all right.
I just have a lot of feelings.
This pleases me.
These are perfectly normal feelings.
Do you even know what you sound like when you talk like that?
Now, shall we begin?
Hey everybody, and welcome back to the Real Feels Podcast. This is Drew here.
And Nathan.
And Nathan.
We're back.
We are back.
Every other week.
Every other week on a Wednesday, just for you.
Pick-a, pick-a, pick-a.
Okay, we're gonna stop that right now.
Hey, that's the end of the song.
That's the end of that song. Guys, we are the Real Feels Podcast. We come to you every other Wednesday with a brand new movie of a brand new genre, and we break that movie down, talk about, you know, what makes it work, what doesn't make it work, the good, the bad, the ugly, how we feel about it, and it's all for you.
We may not do a brand new genre and stuff every time, because we're gonna run out of genres.
We're gonna periodically run out of genre. We try to do all the genres that we have available to us that we made our list of movies from
and then we'll come back and we'll
suggestmeamovie.com.
I like that website,
and it's a great website. Guys, if you're ever just need to find a movie for the night and you're like, oh my god, I don't want to stream and, you know, like go through Netflix and, you
that's
know,
half
search
my life,
everything and Amazon Prime and Hulu, just find me a movie.
There's times I'm afraid to, like, get into a season of a
show.
Because I'm like, I don't know if I'm going to like this or not. And I don't want to, like, commit.
I definitely can't decide on a television show for, like, Netflix or even, like, Amazon or Hulu or anything like that just off the first episode. I got to give it at least, like, 3 episodes in.
But that's already.
But you're already committed.
You're
by
already
that
committed.
Point.
Yeah.
You're like, my gosh, the season.
You're
is
on
only,
date three.
It's only 10 episodes.
You're already meeting her parents. Like, yeah. No, that's.
Okay, guys. To avoid all that,
suggestmeamovie.com.
Suggestmeamovie.com. You go on there. You put in the factors of, like, you know what? I want a comedy, and I want it between, you know, the years of like 1988 and 1992, and you can even set it for the specific number of stars and ratings on the IMDb score.
The votes.
And you just say, apply those factors, click suggest me a movie, and boom.
And then you can kind of do sometimes what we would
what
do
we
is
did,
like,
we would click
I don't
want
to watch that movie.
Clearly, we were indecisive, but we're not that indecisive.
We were the girlfriend to, like, suggesting the movie is the boyfriend saying, you know, hey, babe, what about this movie? And we're like, I don't
want
to watch that movie.
That. Whatever you want, honey. Okay.
Anything.
So
I don't care.
I want to watch this. Not that.
Not that one.
Okay. Not okay. No. Maybe. All right. Well, what do you want? Babe, I said you choose. Okay. But either way. Guys, we definitely try to go through a different genre for you every other Wednesday. When we run out, we just recycle everything back to the start. And we go through new movies again, just for you. The main point, it is just for you. If you are one of our old friends and you're coming back and you're listening to this episode again because you just can't get enough of us, thank you.
I hate to take away from you guys, but I would do this for Drew and I as well. I enjoy this.
Right.
So we do this for you.
We do this for you.
But we take a little bit off the top, just kind of like the mob.
Just kind of like the mob.
You know, you get what you need, but we take a little bit.
But you know what? Just by taking that little bit, we also welcome in brand new people to the family.
To the family.
To the family.
Hey, look at this guy.
Hey, this guy. Okay. If you're new to the family, welcome. We love you. Sit back, relax. We got a great movie for you. It is 1990s.
Goodfellas.
Goodfellas. Mm. Directed by Mr. Martin Scorsese.
The one and only.
The one and
the man
only.
That was on the ground.
On the ground. You know, this movie had a budget of $25 million.
Spent every penny.
And they did spend every single penny. But you know what? It was kind of, it's almost disappointing to see that it only made $46 million back for the box up, for the U.S. gross. Like, it's not even double the money. It's close. But you know what it is? It even pays off for the fact that this one is often seen as Scorsese's, like, you know, top movie that he has gotten right, that he has, you know, put all of his heart and soul into. And more importantly, guys, the Library of Congress has this movie stored away because it is perfect.
That's got to be a pretty big honor,
right?
Like,
it's such a great depiction of the time in which this movie is set in. And it's such an accurate depiction, which, you know, totally makes sense, because not only did Martin Scorsese work with the guy who wrote the book Wise Guys, they also had the real Henry Miller? No, not Henry. Henry Hill.
Hill.
Henry Miller. They had the real guy, Henry Hill. He was kind of like, you know, giving them a little bit of tidbits and information. All the while, he was in witness protection until he was actually thrown out of witness protection because he kind of like got back into his old ways and he was...
Old habits die hard.
Old habits die hard. But more importantly, it's a great film. It's a fun film. And don't hate me, people. If you are a diehard Martin Scorsese fan, don't get me wrong. Don't get me wrong. It's a good movie. I even just said it was a great movie. But I think it's like maybe a half hour too long.
Yeah, this whole movie
is... It's nearly 2.5 hours.
It's like an Italian meal. And the courses just keep coming. And you're like, please... I cannot eat anymore. It's delicious. It's amazing. And they just keep putting food in front of you, and you're like,
no, I'm full.
Thank you so much.
Like, oh, you're not full. You're not dead yet.
No, you're so skinny. Like, you're like, oh, you're no, so skinny. Gosh, I feel so heavy. Please, I can't take another bite. This movie jams so much.
Right.
In a timeline of what, 30 years?
I believe it's going from 30 years because it's starting in like 1950s. And then rolling into the 60s where the kid, you know, you have Henry Hill starting off as what? He was a 13-year-old boy.
Yeah.
When he started working for the cab company, which was the front for the gangster, you know, business that was literally across the street from his apartment. And it goes from there. It follows his life, you know, as from when he started until he eventually had to go into witness protection.
Crazy.
So, guys, again... We have 1990s Goodfellas, directed by Martin Scorsese. And more importantly, if you have never seen this movie, get on top of that. I know that it was on Netflix for a short time. I don't believe it's on Netflix anymore. If you have the chance, see this
and
movie.
And you have 2.5 hours.
And you have 2.5 hours to
maybe,
yourself.
Maybe three, because the other 30 minutes, you're just going to digest it and sit there for a sec and be like, wow, that was...
That was
a movie.
That was something. But more importantly, as we continue down the line of this podcast for this episode, spoilers, I cannot emphasize enough, spoilers.
And not safe for work, possibly.
Oh, no. This is definitely not safe for work. So, let's put that out there. There is definitely going to be a not safe for work warning.
Get the earmuffs out.
Labeled on the podcast. We're going to get into more of the reasons why. Let's just say that there is going to be some vulgarity.
Every 2 minutes.
Almost every 2 minutes. Not necessarily.
And not even by us.
It's not even by us.
This is all them.
We're going to be talking about the movie and especially like why the clips that we're going to play for the favorite lines that we like, the worst parts that we didn't like. It's unavoidable where you might hear an F-bomb dropped.
Yeah.
So again. 1990s Goodfellas. Why don't you guys have a nice listen
to the trailer?
To a trailer.
Never rat on your friends and always keep your mouth shut.
As far back as I can remember, I always wanted to be a gangster.
Hey, Mom, what do you think?
You look like a gangster.
I know I'd
go. By the time I grew up, there was $30 billion a year in cargo moving through Idlewild Airport. Believe me, we tried to steal every bit of it.
What do you do?
I'm in construction.
He's not Jewish.
Mazel tov.
For most of the guys, killing's got to be accepted.
Hey, Henry, here's an arm.
Very funny, guys.
Here's a leg.
Here's a wing. What do you like, the leg or the wing? It's you.
To live any other way was nuts. And we were treated like movie stars with muscle. We had it all just for the asking.
It's gonna be a good summer.
It was a glorious time.
In a world that's powered by violence, on the streets where the violent have power, a new generation carries on an old tradition.
that sums it up.
Guys, this is, again, it is a story of family. It is a story of finding oneself and finding a place amongst those who, for a time, you know, seemed like they cared.
And they ruled the world.
They ruled their world.
Their world.
They ruled their world.
They built it, and then they ruled. Yeah, it
to like to basically make sure that people understand.
And it's weird that they have this strange moral compass that is so messed up in so many ways. But then there's times when you're like, oh, well, they're kind of good people, yeah? And then you instantly regret saying that. You go, nope,
yeah,
nope.
So, I mean, okay.
They're the worst.
Nathan, when you think of, like, the mob or the mafioso, like, I mean, what are, like, three things that immediately come to mind?
Drugs.
Okay.
Death.
Okay.
And more death? I mean, like...
drugs, death, and possibly death from drugs.
Or no. Just, like, the rise, but never getting to the top.
Okay.
And then... crashing, falling down, because that's what most mob stories entail, is the rise and fall. There's
right.
always
there exactly no
always
one,
a fall.
No one necessarily like stays in power. I mean, it's to the point where you have the character of Henry Hill. He starts off as a lowly little like cab driver boy for the kids. He runs mobsters. He runs errands for them. He will be delivering money and little notes and stuff like that. And eventually. Like, he's not going to school. He's working for them. He gets a letter. His dad gets a letter. And he says, like, oh, how was school today? Oh, it was good. Oh, did you learn a lot?
He walks into that
oh,
one.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I learned a lot. He's like, oh, okay. Well, can you explain this? He opens a letter up in front of him. He said, it's a letter from the school. He says, you haven't been there in months. And he kind of pauses. And he smacks him across the face. He's like, months! And he's on the kid's on the ground, and he's beating him with a belt. And he's all like, you're a bum! You're a bum! That's all he'll ever be, is a bum! So he has this hardworking, you know, pure Irish blood father who, one, he knows the goodness of staying in school. And he wants his son to have a better life for him
than
what he did.
Yeah.
Because, you know, he's got a big family to support. The mother is simply happy that her son is, you know, staying out of trouble. And then once he starts working for the gangsters, he gets enough money. They buy him a suit, and he comes home one day and he's like, look, Ma, how do you think I look? Do you like my shoes? Aren't they spiffy? And she's like, you look like a gangster.
Yeah.
And it's just like almost this disappointment in her eyes of, what have you done?
Well, and once you kind of step into this life, that's it.
Right. There's no going out.
There's no going out. There's no, unless you either go out dead or in witness protection.
Right.
And you've sold everyone out.
It's the idea that, like, it doesn't matter whether or not it is, like, the Italian mob or, like, the Yakuza or you have the cartel.
Yeah.
I mean, it's the idea that, you know, once you're in this life, you're in it for good. It's funny, like, tiny little tangent. First tangent of the show. Don't worry, there will be more. I had a student. Like a couple years ago, he even said, like, oh, you know what? I don't need to go to college. I can totally join the cartel and make my money, and then I'll get out when I want, and I'll just live on Easy Street. And I was like, I'm sorry, you're gonna do what? Oh, yeah, no, I'll work for a while. I'll get me some money. I'll get me some ladies, and then I'll get out when I want, and I'll just, I'll leave and I'll go on Easy Street. I was like, You're not gonna leave when you want. You'll leave in an oil drum.
Yeah.
But you're not gonna leave
in hydrochloric acid. Like,
do you think they're gonna let you out alive? And I mean, like, not necessarily like the most appropriate conversation for a classroom, but it's like, you need to understand. Like, he was dead serious. He was dead serious that he was like, I'll totally go work for the cartel and I'll make it out alive when I want to. No.
That's if you survive.
Right.
That's
if you're
survive
this.
The things that they're going to have you do. Because as we've just watched from this movie,
right,
they put themselves in some of the worst spots possible.
Oh, yeah. I mean, like, even as, like, a 16-year-old kid, like, he's not only, you know, verging on to newer and, like, bigger and more dangerous things, especially when he, you know, goes across to the car park that is housing the cars for, like, rival like mob families or anything like
smashing
that.
Smashing
the windows, pours in gas, and then lights them all on fire, and they just blow up. I mean, he blows up like like 6 or 7 cars.
Yeah.
And it's just like, it's escalating. The things that he is getting himself into are escalating.
Which I kind of, this is one thing that I wish that the movie hinted at more of his emotional, like, uneasiness with this.
Right.
Because it seems he goes into this, I mean, obviously this is over, you know,
it's over,
over 10 years.
Several years.
But having it where he kind of, like, maybe questions it a little bit more internally of, man, maybe this isn't right.
Right. And you actually, like, look at, I watched a couple of interviews and I read some articles about, you know, Henry Hill as he was growing up and he was going off on this, you know, new life that he was venturing into with these people, or as he, you know, later came to, like, claim them to be these psychopaths, these maniacs. When his life kind of got turned around and he got, you know, the long arm of the law punched him first time, he was caught selling those cigarettes in the film, and then he, as you know, as they say, he got pinched. And so he had to go in, basically kept his mouth shut. He was guilty, but he didn't rat on anybody. He didn't give any names. And, you know, Robert De Niro's character, you know, Jimmy Conway was like, I'm proud of you. And he's like, proud of me? I thought you'd be mad at me. He said, no, no. One,
you did the right thing.
You know, you kept your mouth shut and you didn't rat on anybody. Like that, those are good things, all right? You did well.
And you were doing it for the family.
Right, if you're doing it, you're doing it for the family.
Yeah.
But I mean, he left that courtroom and everyone's coming down the stairs. They're all like, hey, you popped your cherry. All right, everyone's giving him like hugs and little kisses on the cheek. They're like, oh man, everybody has to get pinched once. You know, it's good for you. This is great. But it was at that time, if you watch these interviews, he was already saying like, I got to get out of this. Like, this is far too dangerous. And there was never necessarily a moment, or at least one that was big enough to last in this movie, where he clearly said, I got to get out of here.
I got to live a normal life.
I got to get out of here, and we got to do something that's, you know, right by us, he and his wife and his two kids, but they never really got away.
And I don't know if that's because just deep down inside, that's kind of what he always wanted. He wanted the power.
He wanted the power.
And the rush.
He wanted the rush. He respected the fact that these people got to
do whatever,
drive around in their cars, do whatever they want. That was him watching as a kid at the cab company,
yeah,
you know, late at night. He said, like, they can park wherever they want. No cops gave them tickets. You know, when he was selling cigarettes with Jimmy Conway, and they were taking all of the loot from all the trucks from the airport, because that's basically how they got all of their, you know, revenue, all of their money. They basically said, like, you know what, we live by the airport, and that airport belonged to Polly.
Which is, okay, just the whole, like, hey, here's our moral code.
Right.
But, we're, and, you know, oh, it's not really stealing. They just lost a couple of, you know, cases of this and that. And then they, no. You guys
You rob the people who were driving the trucks unless they were already in on it.
Yeah.
And if someone was already in on it, you know, they take the truck away, and then suddenly there's that scene where the guy, you know, he runs back into the diner and he says, like, oh my God, get someone, give me a nickel, I got a call. And they're like, two black guys just stole my truck, can you believe it? And they're like, oh man, you had to go there.
Yeah. That was the time, though. Then.
Right, it was the time. It was the time, and that's something that he had to do. But, I mean, like, throughout this entire time, we are dramatically meeting more and more characters that we're being introduced to. So you have Jimmy Conway, played by Robert De Niro, a fantastic, fantastic role that, quite honestly, was first offered to Al Pacino. And Al Pacino actually said no because he didn't want to be typecasted, which is something that to this day he says that he regrets.
Oh.
He regrets that he did not take this role. And Robert De Niro, before he actually accepted the role of Jimmy Conway, he was offered not only the role of Jimmy Conway, but also Tommy DeVito.
Oh, wow.
And so he took Jimmy Conway, which, as we both know, Tommy DeVito went to Joe Pesci, which Joe Pesci in this film is crazy.
Like, almost too, like,
It's an uncomfortable,
like, comically, or, like, too much.
Almost like an annoying, a cocky, annoying way. I was kind of like referencing earlier, like the way that Jamie Foxx is in Baby Driver, we were talking earlier on the phone.
Yeah.
Like, I feel that, like, Joe Pesci's kind of cockiness about him, his arrogance that he's better than everybody and he knows what's going on and no one can touch him. That's what Jamie Foxx to me was in Baby Driver. Personally, the only bad thing about that movie, and I know everybody's not a fan of Kevin Spacey, I'm not a fan of Kevin Spacey now either, but I thought that he did well in the film. But we're going to get off that because nobody likes Kevin Spacey anymore. But again,
that sucks.
Joe Pesci in this film as Tommy DeVito is just insane. But despite the fact that he is that character that you love to hate, much like Dolores Umbridge in the Harry Potter films.
Okay.
All right, you love to hate them, but they also become a favorite.
And yeah, the lines that he has, the
lines,
just
that he's
and
got.
Just the way he delivers them and holds himself in this movie is so
right.
Perfect.
And I think it's more to the fact that it's specific scenes that involve Joe Pesci's character that have been parodied. Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, nailed it.
Did I mention I teach English? So you have so many scenes, but it's one in particular when he does the whole, like, am I funny? I'm funny to you?
Best line.
How funny? What funny? Am I a clown? Am I here to entertain you? It's this entire scene, and we'll play that for you guys in a second.
That's not, what's really funny is the fucking bank job away in Sea Caucus, I'm in the middle of the fucking weeds laying down. He comes over, he said, what are you doing? I said, I'm resting. Here you're resting at a fucking beach in a park. I said, I'm resting. I know I'm resting. They pull me in, they start giving me all kinds of questions, you know, this and that. He says, so what are you going to tell us, tough guy? I said, my usual, zero, nothing. I tell you, the fuck. He says, no, you're going to tell me something today, tough guy. I said, all right, I'll tell you something. Go fuck your mother. Bing, pow, boom, bing. You saw the paper, Anthony. My head was up like this. So now I'm coming around, you know. I start to come out of it. Who do I see in front of me? This big prick again. He says, oh, what do you want to tell me now, tough guy? I said, Bing, what are you doing here? I thought I'd tell you to go fuck your mother. I thought he was going to shit. Pow, bing, pow. Oh, fuck is... See, I wish I was big just once.
You're a really funny. Really funny.
What do you mean I'm funny?
It's funny, you know. It's a good story. It's funny. You're a funny guy.
What do you mean? You mean the way I talk? What?
Just, you know, you're just funny. It's funny, you know, the way you tell the story and everything.
Funny how? I mean, what's funny about it?
Hey, Tommy, no, you got it all wrong.
Anthony. He's a big boy. He knows what he said. What'd you say?
You're right.
Funny how? What?
Just, you know, you're funny.
You mean, let me understand this, because maybe it's me. I'm a little fucked up, maybe. But I'm funny how? I mean, funny like I'm a clown. I amuse you. I make you laugh. I'm here to fucking amuse you. What do you mean funny? Funny how? How am I funny?
I'm not just, you know how you tell a story? What?
No, I don't know. You said it. How do I know? You said I'm funny. How the fuck am I funny? What the fuck is so funny about me? Tell me. Tell me what's funny.
Get the fuck out of here, Tommy.
You motherfucker. I almost had him. Stuttering, you stuttering prick here. Frankie, was he shaking? I wonder about you sometimes, Henry. You may fold under questioning.
But it's that entire scene that is made fun of in various forms. You not only have it done in Family Guy, where's that whole thing was all like, what do you mean I'm funny? What kind of funny? Like Rita Rudnev funny? And they're like, yeah, like Rita Rudnev. He's like, oh my God, thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. And if anybody remembers, back in like 1994, 1995, you had the TV show Animaniacs. And Animaniacs...
Drew pulling some old material out. Whoa.
They had those pigeons that walked around the city. Then they were called the Good Feathers. And you had the Godfather Pigeon. And he had droopy eyes. But more importantly, you had this pigeon who had like two different colored eyes. And he would always do this embodiment of Joe Pesci's character, Tom DeVito. And he would take everything that's said to him as some type of insult. Like he swoops down and he finds a bagel. And the other pigeon's like, oh, man, you're a swell guy. He's like, what do you mean I'm swell? Do you say I have a fat head? Swell? What do you mean swell? No, I'm just saying you're a swell guy. That's it. And he gets in. He would jump into a fight. Guys, I'll put the link. There is actually, and I greatly enjoyed myself with this. I found like a 10-minute video that I think the guy's name is Pesto. So it's called Pesto's Rants. I'll put that in the show notes. I'll put a link to the YouTube video. It's very, very funny to watch.
This is Joe Pesci's character is Clamps in Futurama.
The clamps.
He's so volatile on everything, and you're like, dude, just calm down.
Right.
Anything. And he takes it to that level, but then that's the part that is so unfair about the way he acts to people. People can never get a good read on him.
Because you don't know how he's going to take it, whether he's going to be so serious, whether he's going to be joking. It's
and even the way he jokes, he's waving a gun. Like,
he's so serious. And in people, it's to the point where you literally see even Ray Liotta's character.
I said his name right.
Guys, I've been saying like Ray Liotta or something for the last like 45 minutes.
Ray Liotta.
Ray Liotta. So he, like the way his character, it's even main to that like comical meme where he's laughing at the whole like I'm funny to you scene where he does that like
I hate his laugh. Because it almost,
it's so over the top.
It is.
And it's so like,
I like Ray Liotta. I don't like that laugh in that, in those like couple scenes.
And he does it in quite a few scenes. And almost every single time that he does that laugh, it's when Tommy is there. And it's, I think everyone's laughing, despite the fact that, you know, Henry Hill's character actually said like, you know, you're a funny guy and that's what started it. I think he genuinely did think he was funny at that moment, but I think people laugh at Tommy because they're scared. If they either don't laugh or they laugh too hard, like what's his response going to be? Everything is judged.
And it's not like a fair judgment.
No, and it's not a fair judgment. It's completely taken out of context, or it's like, you know, it's taken too rough.
He takes an SU and he kills the guy for it.
When he shoots Spider in the foot,
come
on.
And
he starts dancing around. He's like, oh, look at him. Look at him. He's just dancing
around.
He's
fine. Like,
you faker. You total faker.
You shot him in the foot. Like, that's the only, like, I think problem that I have with him is he's such a good character for a movie because you get so frustrated with him. He's this human that has some emotion, but honestly, he just doesn't, if it's not a part of his world, he doesn't care. And so he gladly, oversteps these moments and puts it in awkward territory.
Like when Spider comes back after getting his foot wrapped because, you know, Tommy decided to shoot him in the foot.
Oh, look at the cast is the size of your head.
Oh, look at the cast the size of your head. Why don't you do a little dance for us for a little while? And then you have Spider, like, Spider grew a pair and decided to tell him, he's like, you know what, Tommy, why don't you go fuck yourself? And immediately, like, Joe Pesci's, like, playing cards and he stops and he looks up and he's like, oh? He has that look on his face of like, I'm sorry. Can you say that again?
And Jimmy tries to like be like, oh, I like it. You know,
Jimmy's
oh, he
like,
grew some pair.
Whoa,
yeah, good job.
You
good
decided
job.
To like, you know what, Spider? He's throwing money on the table. He's like, this is for you. Thank you. You stood up for yourself. Don't take nobody's shit.
He didn't even get to spend it.
And then he's joking around with Tommy saying he's busting his balls. He's like, you going to take that? Come on. What are you going to do? And immediately he takes out his
gun. I'll show you what I'm going to do.
Boom, 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 boom. He shoots the guy like six times and he falls down, which actually, the actor who's playing Spider, when he falls back and he hits the bar, he hit a glass on top of the bar so hard that he cut open his hand and he fell on the ground. So he's bleeding out from his hand.
That's acting commitment.
Right? It's kind of like that moment in Django Unchained when Leonardo DiCaprio like cracked the glass in his hand and he just kept acting. Like,
I was going to say Lord of the Rings, when Viggo Mortensen kicks the helmet.
Didn't he break his foot?
He broke his foot. Yes. He just screamed it out, and they're like, yes, this was the one. We're keeping it. Dude,
let's keep that in there.
I love moments like that in films.
Right. And you know what? It's actually the moments where, at this time, again, guys, this is not a podcast to be listening out loud when people might be offended. But this is one of those movies that you can find in the script originally. Only 20 F-bombs were written in the original script. Now, we laugh because
draw a little X
everywhere.
Next to that.
They're everywhere.
At a three.
It was at the times in which the guys were actually just rehearsing the scripts and they were allowed to improvise so much. They added 301 F-bombs. Just by improvising.
How do you not, though? When you're doing a mob film,
and
that voice
and that
feeling.
I get it. But, like, okay, this is, and again, I am in no way, like, a prude, okay?
I beg to differ, Drew. No, I'm just kidding. I'm just kidding.
Okay.
You're pretty good.
It's almost like watching for the first time when I watched The Departed.
Okay? Yeah.
The Departed, in my opinion, I think has, like, a slightly elevated amount of language. And it's not that it's bad for the movie, but me personally as a viewer, it kind of like distracted me. It distracted me that when like every other word was like F this, F that, F that.
That's how I felt about the Big Lebowski. We were doing the Big Lebowski challenge.
Okay.
And yeah. I'm like, I'm not having fun anymore drinking because there's too many F words.
Because there's too many F bombs.
And I keep drinking. And I get it. That's the challenge.
You can do the same thing with Pulp Fiction.
But I'm literally, I cannot stop drinking because every other word.
Right. And I don't know if this is like something that is, in my memory will fail me at this moment of like, you know, consistent through Scorsese films because, like, one, I didn't watch Wolf of Wall Street.
Right? I was going to get into
and
that.
Wolf of Wall Street, I hear, has
the most
F-bombs currently for a film. And I don't know if that's just something that Mr. Scorsese wanted. But, I mean, honestly, one, Wolf of Wall Street didn't look that good to me, so I didn't see it. And
you sound like a gangster when you're talking right now. But, like,
it didn't look that
whack
good
the
to
wolf.
Me. But you know what? I didn't want to see it, and I'm perfectly fine with that. Okay.
It's good.
I think, like, gangster, like, attitude is going to come through.
It's just going to, it's natural.
It's the symbiosis that I'm having with this.
This movie and Wolf have a very parallel line of amazing, 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 and then all of a sudden, there was a point in this movie when I just stopped and was like, I don't know if I want to watch anymore.
Right.
Like, I don't know if I can, please get me off the roller coaster right now because this is, it's so long. It's great, but there's almost that, like, moral, I think I'm full on my, like,
right.
Degraded, like, it's, I don't know. It's so weird. Great movies, but there just comes that point where you're like, yeah, I think I'm going to tap out.
You have the various moments in this movie where, again, it's after the point in which, you know, Ray Liotta's character... I did it again.
You did it.
You know what? I'm just going to say Henry Hill.
Landing gear.
When his character grows up and he's trying to, like, show off all of his money to the new girl, Karen, and he's trying to show her a good time. And ironically enough, when they were going into the Copacabana, during the time that they were filming, they were allowed to film inside, but for some reason they weren't allowed to go through the front door.
Huh. All
right? So Martin Scorsese said, well, more this is great. Let's just show how his lifestyle is going. So when you have that still camera shot that's following them. And
the
it's
longest
done,
scene
it's
ever. Oh, my gosh.
Long take. Now, first off, it's a little bit long. But two, it's beautifully shot.
That's the thing that is kind of
so
like
perfect, but it's
annoying
so
about it. Is like, this is so, this can't exist. Like something like this where it's just this winding tunnel of.
Right.
This underground life that is just the back room
and
of how
that's
they
all
cook.
It is.
That's
it's the back, you know, it's the back hallways and rooms and the kitchen of the Copacabana. But more importantly, it's showing that, you know, he's so high up and so well respected that he can walk by and just, you know, say hi to people.
Yeah.
And he sneaks on in.
Tastes a little bit of the sauce. Right, oh, yeah, a little bit more salt. Like, wait, what? What? You can do that?
He goes to the front of the line and they immediately get him a table. And he's like tipping them. And the lady's like, you just gave them each a 20. Is that okay? He's like, yeah, no, it's fine. Why don't you sit down, doll? And that's really it. Like, he shows off his life, but it continues, you know, throughout the time in which they gotta do more heists. They gotta do, you know, more.
It's never enough.
It's never enough. There's always a bigger game to play.
Which is weird that they, like, they don't settle on something. Which is why it's weird when he gets into the drugs and it's like, dude.
Right. And he doesn't get into the drugs until they get pinched. Okay. I'm just going to use all this mob lingo.
It's all good. All
right. So they get pinched because they were caught with. Was it the French heist? They took the money from the French.
The big one.
Yeah, the big one where they took like $6 million. And so they took $6 million, which they were let in by that. I can't remember the guy's name, but he played the role of Frenchie. He was the dude from Dumb and Dumber, the one who the one who like yelled at them in the car, and he was trying to poison them all the time. But you have them. You know, doing bigger and bigger scores. And all the while, Polly, you know, is kind of like kept abreast of the situation where he's getting the money. He's making everybody, you know, happy. And when they go to jail, that's when, you know, Henry gets into the drugs. And he starts selling more. And his wife is kind of going down the hill because...
Cheating
on him left and right, because they even said at the Copacabana, Saturday nights were for wives, but Friday nights were for the girlfriends.
Which is unreal that able to live this double life and
no one's like batting an eye, or no one is even like thinking about.
But at the same time, they live in a world of fear.
They do live in a world of fear. Even the wives, when they were having their like little like potluck party. And, you know, they're, like, doing each other's hair, and they're putting on, like, the skincare thing. And this is the same time that Karen is finally seeing, like, the depths of this world. She's noticing that the wives are put together, but they don't have the best of, clothes.
Yeah.
Like, they're kind of cheap. They're talking about how, like, their kids are out of control. They're having to beat them with broom handles. And at the entire time, Karen is not only, like, being suffocated by how much she has to, like, take in, but she's still trying to learn because, again, this is her world now.
Yep.
They can't go out.
And she makes it very – like, that's what I do really appreciate about the film and the actress.
Lorraine Bracco.
She does such a good job of talking – like, just her narrating, I love it, where she says, you know what? I actually really liked it. I knew it was wrong, but Or when, like, he does something and she's like, kind of turn me on.
Oh,
like,
that's after he takes the gun because the friend from across the way, I guess, decided to, like, try and, like, you know, like, rape her. Or, like, he just, like, messed her up. Like, he was in the car and she's like, he was trying to touch me. I said no. He leaned in to kiss. I said no. And then he threw me out of the car. And so that's when she called Henry and he drove over. He dropped her off. He immediately grabbed the gun out of his car and he walked over. And he was like, well, what do you want? And he grips the gun.
Pistol whipping him.
Like, oh my God. Like, he's obviously breaking his nose and a couple of teeth out. And then he takes the gun and points it at his two other friends. And they're like, don't shoot.
What do you want, fucko? You want some? Huh?
Oh, hey. What are you doing?
I swear, my fucking mother, if you touch her again, you're dead!
Don't shoot!
You're high, Chris. Are you all right? Are you all right?
Yeah.
Huh?
Yeah. I know there are women like my best friends who would have gotten out of there the minute their boyfriend gave them a gun to hide. But I didn't. I gotta admit the truth. It turned me on.
We're okay. We're good.
It's like, I swear on my mother, like,
you touch her again, I'll kill
you. Oh, my gosh.
And so he takes the gun back to her and he says, here, hide this. And she's like, I don't know what it was. Like, most girlfriends would have run and, you know, never looked back. She's but like, she's
I
like,
I loved it.
It was such a turn on. And I'm thinking, good, you are a messed up girl.
Let's do this again Tuesday, maybe? can we?
All right, I'll make the drifter, like, give me a wink.
Oh, and this hobo.
But she's again, it's the danger of the lifestyle. It's also the comfort of having that inner circle. But it's like an inner circle that's, like, not good for you.
Yeah, you and know, later on, she almost, like, feels like she, because when they start getting the money and, like, they start living the lifestyle, she starts
enjoying it all the time.
I earned this. All right. This, you know, time that I've kind of put up with this crap, and I...
She starts showing off all, like, the nice things that she's bought. She's like, this table came
in two pieces. Yeah.
And look at that wall. Look at that wall. And she pressed the button, and it, like, separates the wall, and there's the TV set and the recorder and the record player. And she's all like, oh, they came in and they did this all today. And you're thinking, good Lord, this is an expensive apartment. But even when Henry was having, like, the affair, you got to understand, like, how much money he possibly had.
That's what's crazy.
Because he had to raise not only his family, but he got her this really nice apartment.
And these other side girls. Right. And on top of that, taking the cut for Paul, you know, I mean,
right. So it's not even like a full amount of money. Like, he's taking his cut. He's giving a cut to Tommy. He's giving a cut to Jimmy. But, I mean, I don't think at this time when he was doing drug money.
That was all him.
That was Tommy, that was Jimmy, and him. Like, Paulie, when he got out of prison, Paulie said, like, you don't do any drugs. That whole scene where he's in the backyard and he says, don't make a jerk out of me. And he says, like, you're not going to do it. Okay, yeah, Paulie, okay. And he smacks him across the face. Like, or not across.
He gives him, like, wake up. Tap.
And actually, that entire, like, smack was improvised. So, like, Ray Liotta's face... I can't say his name right.
When Leona. Landing gear.
When Henry Hill, like, responds, like, that whole, like, what? Like, that's real. So it's actually, like, a good response.
I love things like that. I love it.
But with so many things in this movie that we probably love in the entire scene, it's things where they were not only, like, improvised.
Lucky shot.
But they were taken later on and added to the film by the director. Like, again, we're going to go all the way back to Joe Pesci, the entire, like, I'm funny to you scene. This is an actual experience from Joe Pesci's life. Like, he had this entire encounter with a comedian, and it's Joe Pesci saying to the comedian, like, you're funny. He's like, what do you mean I'm funny? Like, what kind of funny?
And to come from, like, Pesci, you're right.
And so he's like,
oh,
he's
God,
like, switching it around and turning it into this, like, awkward, like, okay, are we all going to die type of thing? What's going on?
I'm sure the comedian didn't have a gun and, like, pointing it at him. I don't know, maybe.
Maybe not. No. So, yeah, what do you got? You got Jimmy's character of
Danny DeVito.
Robert De Niro. As Jimmy Conway. And I think he does a really, really good job. I'm not saying that this is, like, his best role.
No.
I think definitely if, like, you look for more things, like,
and
Robert
I would say
De Niro,
that's one of the biggest compliments to Robert De Niro is,
right,
this is not your best.
This is not your best, but it's probably one of your most, like, memorable things.
It's really good.
I think with Robert De Niro portraying Jimmy Conway, it's one of the more delicate and fluidic roles throughout.
He's constant through it.
He is constantly the same guy, and he has the mentality of, like, this needs to get done, but I also have a set of rules that you need to follow. Same with Paulie. Paulie is like this father figure throughout the entire time. He wants to make everybody happy. He wants to keep the family safe.
He handles the situation with their affair. Like, he's right. Like, I'll talk to her. I know what to say. You're going to go take a little vacation. You're going to do some bad stuff for me. You're going to come back. Everything's
but
good.
You have, you know, Robert De Niro, you know, Jimmy Conway. He does take action. After that heist happens, after they steal all that money, and everybody starts buying things that they shouldn't buy. The one guy buys a brand new Cadillac, a big pink Cadillac, and they're like, oh, but I love this car. And he's like, what did I tell you? Don't buy anything. Don't buy anything that's going to make you, like, stand out. And then, Frank Saverio's character, Frankie Carbone, he buys his new girl, like, a big mink coat. And he's like, take it off and take it back. Are you guys insane? We just robbed, like, and stole $6 million. You need to, like, think real quick. And from that point on, everybody who was part of that famous heist, and the name of the heist, like, is completely leaving my mind right now.
The most famous.
The most famous. I know that up until, like, 2014, it still hadn't been
topped.
Not even topped. Like, it hadn't been found out.
Oh, wow.
Everybody that was involved. But most people that were involved had died by that point or had been arrested for it.
Okay.
But everybody that was involved, except for Henry Hill, you know, Ray Liotta's character.
There you go.
That's 2 points for me. he started killing everybody off. You know, the husband and the wife were, you know, who were just married. They were found in their brand new pink Cadillac, shot. You have, you know, Frankie Carbone's character was found in a meat locker, you know, hung up. Two guys, Frenchie, the guy who gave him the key when they were stealing all the France money for the Euro exchange. He was found in a dumpster being loaded into a garbage truck with another guy. So again, you have these like classic
Samuel
cliche
Jackson
kind of like assassinations that are going on that are, you know, attributed to like mobster and gangster style type of, you know, thematic deaths.
It's keeping it the tanked, as they say,
right,
tying up all the loose ends.
Yeah. But sadly, it's coming to the point where you have people who literally are getting their comeuppance.
Yeah.
Joe Pesci's character gets whacked because he took out a made man. And if you are a made man,
this is so crazy. This is the
cannot be touched.
This is the compass part where it's like, wait.
Right.
So this person is at a status that like they can do whatever they want.
Right, and you cannot touch them, you cannot endanger them, you cannot kill them, unless you have explicit permission from another head of the family, or like they've done something to violate the code of conduct, where if you're a made man, you can't be touched. And so Joe Pesci takes out this guy named Bratz, and he was in the joint for a while, and he got out, and he started like, you know, busting Tommy's balls. He's saying like, hey, you know what? This guy used to shine shoes. He was one of the greatest guys ever. Hey, you know what, Tommy? If I wanted your opinion, I'd tell you to go get your shine box. And Tommy's like, yeah, maybe you aren't aware I don't shine shoes anymore.
I'm good.
If you look up the history,
he was on his way, too.
He was on his way. Yeah, he was, gosh, he was like, Bratz just got out. He wanted his old business back. And while he was actually in the joint, it was Tommy who took over his loan shark business. So that's why Tommy was actually making some more money in real life. The actual character, actual person that Joe Pesci's character was based off of, he took over Bratz's business. And so that's why there was kind of like that dispute between the two of them. And he wanted his business back. And so Tommy's like, no.
I'm good.
I'm gonna keep collecting the money.
I don't shine shoes no more.
Right, because according to Henry Hill, Joe Pesci's depiction of Tommy DeVito was 100, not even 100, sorry. He is quoted as saying 90 to 99% accurate. The only real difference is that the actual character of Tommy DeVito was like 6 foot tall and muscular, and not Joe Pesci, who's like 5'4 and, you know, looks like your uncle.
So crazy, too.
And it's just, it's one of those things where good for Joe Pesci for embodying a character so well. And it's because of this incident, which is the beginning of the movie, when they're driving in the car and they keep hearing that. He's like, "What is that? Did I hit a flat tire?"
Yeah,
flat tire. And then they stop the car and they realize, like, "Oh my god, this guy is still alive in the trunk." And so, as soon as they open the trunk, Joe Pesci takes out that giant kitchen knife,
ugh,
which he took from his mother. Like the scene before they go off to like bury the body of Bratz, they have dinner with his mother, and he just driving that knife
almost
right
like
into the guy,
too easy.
Oh my god, like it's like shooting fish, literally like shooting fish in a barrel. He is just stabbing the guy like 3 or 4 times in the gut, and he's like, die, die.
That's
die,
experience,
die.
And that's scary.
I mean, Ray Liotta's character, like Henry Hill, was just watching, going, like, it was terrifying, it was so horrifying to watch this happen. And then, you know, Robert De Niro's character shoots him. And then finally, the Bratz guy is dead. And this is the intro to the movie.
Yeah.
And don't get me wrong. Like I said, it's a great movie. It's a fun movie. It's a good historical account of what actually took
place.
A
little Tarantino-ish.
A little long. But it's a good movie. This is a great introduction. And then you get those famous
it definitely hooks
words
you.
Where he says, "For as long as I can remember, I always wanted to be a gangster." And it's just, it's a good wrap-up to where, despite everything that was going on, him going in jail, him getting out and realizing that, like, you know, my life's not going to be the same. I ratted out my friends. They went to jail. I needed to get clean. Like, the scene where he's finally, like, he's so doped up on, like, cocaine and pills.
Yeah.
And he finally sees these helicopters following him. This is before he finally goes down. And it's just this crazy, insane scene where, again, as we talked about, it's all about highs and lows. It's about those, like, those reigns of kings and how fragile, like, is that mountain that your throne is on.
And how quickly goes from
fall.
Just, like, the best to absolute
right.
devastation. When they're flushing the coke down the
toilet,
like,
well, when Karen is flushing all the coke, she's freaking out.
Which I love. Like, to me, that was such a good moment for her of, like, dedication. Like,
right.
you know, I'm in this life.
Like, she
with
knows
you.
What to do.
And exactly, like, scared, but definitely, like, handling it.
Right.
Ah, man.
It's down to the point where you have to appreciate how involved Scorsese was in this film. He was overseeing not only all of the costumes, he was making sure that he was getting all of the detail rights, not only with the author who wrote Wise Guys, but also Henry Hill when he actually could. Actually, in the involvement of the film, during the filming, there were actually gangsters and mobsters as part of the extras in the movie who knew Henry Hill, who knew Jimmy Conway and Tommy DeVito, all right, who knew the real-life people who would give little hints about, like, oh, no, this looks accurate. You're right. Okay, you can.
I like this color red.
I like the.
this would cover up blood. This is good. Blood.
But, like.
Let me taste that fake blood. little sweet. What?
You got all this, like, you got all this input where he's trying to make everything perfect. He even had his own parents in the movie.
That's so cool. If I was a big, you know, director, I would love to have my parents.
I'd actually like to see your parents in a movie.
Oh, my gosh.
I wouldn't like to see my parents in a movie. I think my dad would be too, he would ham it up.
Oh, dad would?
My.
I love my dad, but my dad would just yuck it up. My mom would be constantly like, Rich, stop. Like,
my
we're
mother,
in Nathan's movie. I don't want to mess this up for him.
See, whenever my dad can act, but he also kind of like, He goes over the top a little bit. My mother now, on the other hand, okay, both my parents are teachers. And
oh,
so,
surprise, Drew.
Surprise.
Both are mine. So are mine. And they would be telling
this
everyone on
we're
set,
friends.
Oh, well, I was a teacher. For, like,
oh,
that's,
my God. Right.
And
they find
friends.
Out they find out somebody who knows them and
because
they had their
this
kid.
Is what
and
teachers
do. What
everyone
do.
Were sidetracking real quick and talking
second
about teachers.
Tangent.
Teachers do this weird thing where they find other teachers and then they just become best friends.
It's true. We do this.
And this is just how it goes.
It is. But I mean, it's just kind of what we do. And it's actually kind of funny where I find the fact that, like, my father taught somebody and then they got married and had kids. And then I end up having those kids as students. And it's almost like it comes
full circle.
And I mean, no kidding. Like, this has actually happened.
and it's got to be a good feeling of,
it
wow.
is. It's nice. It's fun. But okay. I mean, either way, like, down to the point, like, if my mother started acting in the movie, she has this way of presenting herself, and when she is in front of people, especially if she's acting, she acts, she does a I don't even know what about, like, the best way to describe it. She teacher acts.
Okay.
Like, it's precise, but it's overdone.
Interesting.
It's weird to describe. You'd have to, like, see her do it. But the mother, Scorsese's mother, was in the movie. She's Joe Pesci's mom. All right. She's the one who invites them in late at night and cooks them dinner and shows off her, like, paintings. And
so nice. Such a
Scorsese
nice
had his mother on cast because she was the one who starched all of the collars for the white dress shirts that they all wore, because she, apparently, to Scorsese, was the only one who could do it right. And you know what? Just as how great of a director, you know, Martin Scorsese is, he was so involved in everything. He wanted even the perfection of like a starched collar to be done right.
You know what? Someone needs to do a very formal review and say, I appreciate the starched collars.
I appreciate the starched collar.
Those are accurate.
What was the best part of the movie for you?
The dress shirts.
The starched collars and the fact that in every costume for Robert De Niro, there was a pinky ring to go along with every costume. There actually was. He had a different pinky ring for every costume.
Man.
So, I mean, his father played, I think the name was Vinny.
Yeah.
So he was the older gentleman who went to jail with them.
He was
stirring the sauce. He was also there when Joe Pesci's character got whacked. And Joe Pesci was even saying, like, oh, man, you know, when were you a made man? He said, oh, man, that was 30 years ago. So, I mean, there it's even a testament to say that when you are a made man, you stay safe.
Yeah, that's the closest to getting out that you're ever going to get.
You actually stay safe. And for those who don't know, like, in the history and the kind of like, you know, in the respect of the mob family, like when you are a made man, and you can only be a made man in the Italian mob if you are 100% pure blood Italian. Now, that was the case at the time. Apparently now, or at least like in recent histories, what I was researching, if they can trace your father's lineage back to pure blood Italian,
okay,
like that's good enough. But people like Jimmy Conway and Henry Hill, they would never become made men because they were Irish.
Sorry. always look over your back.
Always, you know, look over your shoulder. Back, and like, you know, I guess you're out of luck.
Maybe join the Irish mob.
Maybe join the Irish mob.
Become what would the Irishmen made men become?
What would they become? Would they be members of the Dead Rabbits? This is Gangs of New York. We're going to switch movies now.
yeah, this is the perfect lead into our next gang film.
No. Oh, man. But, I mean, though, what? 321 F-bombs going for the movie. You had so many things that were, again, made to have it seem right. Robert De Niro, when he was paying the money out, he didn't like the feel of fake money. So he wanted real money. So the props master actually went out, got $5,000, and donated in big air quotes. He gave $5,000 to the movie, and he was saying, like, here, you can use this. And after every take that it was used, no one was allowed to leave the set until it was counted and accounted for. Because he's like, I'm getting my money back.
Yeah.
You're not.
That ain't no fake money. No one's taking these props home.
This isn't a prop.
I let you borrow like $5 for that prop.
No one let me borrow $5.
Overall, though, this movie has cemented itself as one of the best gangster films.
Right.
And just how things are run, the weird moral code that it is.
The weird moral code where they're totally fine with killing for protection.
The
and
family.
For defending the family. They don't mind murder, but they do mind drugs coming in. Something that's going to hurt their community. All right? And if you double-cross them, if you don't finish your job.
If you touch one of the girls that they like.
Right. If you bring any type of harm, again, to someone they care about.
If you don't pay,
if you don't pay
on
up,
time.
If you don't pay on
you
time.
You lose your restaurant. You lose your face.
You lose your face.
You lose it all.
Now, in the movie, they said that Joe Pesci's character was shot in the face because the mother wouldn't be allowed to have an open casket, which actually isn't true because Tommy DeVito's actual body in real life was never found.
Ooh.
So that was a little bit of, like, you know, creative license that was kind of changed. But again, it's just one of those things. It's
still
like,
intense,
like, yeah,
man.
Like, no one ever found him. We may have, like, we were delivered in here. You know, he was given some new cement slippers. You know, he took sleeping a swim in the river.
Sleeping with the fishies.
Sleeping with the fishies. You know, Nathan, we've kind of been going on and on about this movie, but you know what we have not done yet?
What?
We have not gotten to a point where we can cut it out.
What were you thinking?
Well, you got me. By all accounts, it doesn't make sense.
And you've got to cut it out.
Okay. So, cut it out is a part of our show where we decide to find a part of the movie where we can take it out of the entirety of the film, and it won't detract from the story at all.
No.
And as we've discovered before, in Glory, this is something that can be very, very hard, especially
very
when
hard.
It is based on a true story. And personally, for me, I think that you can take out the connection with his family. When you're introduced to his family, like when he has to pick up his brother from the rehab place or from the physical therapy place, when you see his family at the wedding, when he marries Karen, like it doesn't, it's not taking away a lot. It may be like taking away like 30 seconds, maybe a whole minute of the film, but it doesn't seem important enough to attribute it to Henry Hill's like development throughout the entirety of the movie.
I get that.
Because you don't really see them ever again. You have the scene where he beats him because he didn't go to school. You have the scene where they're at the wedding, and then he picks up Michael from the physical therapy place and then takes him back home where they're stirring sauce. Other than that, you don't actually see his parents or his family anymore. So it's not, I don't deem it to be as important.
True. Yeah, it's something that is small, save a little bit of time.
Right.
And I think that it's hard to, even though this movie is so long.
Yeah.
And it's like,
it's so fun, but you can't take anything away.
Exactly. So when you think about like, oh, like we got to cut this thing in at least 20 minutes off.
Right.
But where do you take it? Because everything that Scorsese puts in it matters.
True. Like it develops to a story, but again, I mean, ironically enough, to the point where I just said that the family doesn't really add much. It does add, but in the grand scheme of things, it doesn't seem as important because the family that is not important to him is nothing like the family that he's making in The Mob.
True. Which quickly is replaced and is what he cares about.
Right.
The family just becomes more important than his own true blood.
Exactly. So what would you take out?
Honestly, like,
you can't think of anything.
I've racked and I've like, okay, what if I took out like a couple seconds here and a couple, like, but there's not much that I would take out. I really, every scene that I like analyze and go, yeah, maybe mm-hmm. this, I'm like, well, this does play a part in the movie and I could take out some.
But nothing that seems, you know, worthwhile to mention.
Exactly.
Okay. To a counterpoint to cut it out, we also like to think of, like, good things that are, like, probably some of the best moments in the film. What do you got for a best moment in the film?
I love when she's flushing the Coke down the toilet. I love it. It's the moment of panic of, like, oh, my gosh, our world is going down the toilet. Mm-hmm. It's such a good representation of everything that they've worked hard for has to be dumped in the matter of seconds as fast as they can. And it's just that moment of, like, here's the fall. Like, it's mm-hmm. it's no longer going to, you know, be what you thought it was.
Right.
What about you?
If it's going to be, like, a good moment where I'm actually truly enjoying, like, what's happening, I mean, obviously the whole, like, am I funny to you kind of moment, you know, strikes in. But it's got to be the moment when Joe Pesci is with his new girl and they're, this is after the heist and, you know, Robert De Niro's character is trying to be all, you know, undercover. Joe Pesci's, like, leaving her at the bar, and he's like, now, you stay here. Don't look at anybody. You stay right here. You look at another man, I'll kill you. And he walks away, and the girlfriend's like, he gets so jealous. if I even look at another man, he'll kill me. And the lady next to her is like, That's great.
You guys are really, doing great.
That's a fantastic, like, relationship. That's great. Can we leave? It's just this moment where, like, the seriousness comes crashing to a halt, and it's almost the fact that you can see the delusionment in her eyes and the fear as well. She's like, if I look at another man, he'll kill me. Okay. Yeah. I'm going to scoot down this way.
This is not for me, I guess.
I'm going to walk away. If I even talk to you, maybe he thinks we're together, and then I'll die. This is great. I'm going to leave.
It's almost hard, though, to pick a scene and not, like, have a favorite line, which is why I'm glad we have the other segment that we're going to jump into.
You can say that again.
You can say that again.
Oh, my goodness. That's the most badass thing I've ever heard.
Do you understand the words that are coming out of my mouth?
That's the dumbest thing I've ever heard.
You can say that again.
Okay, guys. So with "you can say that again," in every movie, you have the best line and the worst lines that you can possibly come up with, and just are immortalized in everything that embodies that film. Whether or not it's something that tugs on the heartstrings, it gives you that, oh yeah, kind of moment. And then with bad lines, just like, ugh, why?
Yeah.
So with, obviously, the best line in the movie, I think it actually comes out to, for me, it's Robert De Niro's character telling Henry Hill when he finally got pinched for the first time and he's a kid, and he's like, oh, I thought you'd be mad at me. He's all like, mad at you? No, I'm proud of you. You kept your mouth shut and you didn't say anything.
Counselor, proceed.
Congratulations.
Here's your graduation present.
And what for? I got pinched.
Everybody gets pinched, but you did it right. You told them nothing and they got nothing.
I thought you'd be mad.
Man, I'm not mad. I'm proud of you. You took your first pinch like a man, and you learned the two greatest things in life.
Well,
look at me. Never rat on your friends, and always keep your mouth shut.
Like, he's like telling him, like, you understood what it means.
You got it.
To be a wise guy.
Man.
Yeah, like, you didn't rat on anybody. Now we know we can trust you.
Yes, you've passed the test.
Right, you passed this test.
My favorite line, and we already talked about it a little bit, but when Joe Pesci just that, like, what kind of funny?
Am I funny to you?
Just in that whole moment, as an audience member, you're just like, I don't feel comfortable right now at all. And everyone gets quiet because no one else is comfortable.
Right.
But the way that he delivers those lines, and then the laughter that comes right afterwards, and the everything's all good, even though he smashes the bottle on the restaurant owner's head. It's all just fun games. Oh, look at that. It's hilarious. But that whole scene, I love how he just delivers those lines.
It's a funny, definitely a funny, funny scene.
But ironically, my lines that I would cut it out is Ray Liotta's laughter. I hate it.
Which I'm embodying right now. That was very unfortunate to me because that was real laughter.
It's either that or just the face that he's making.
I think the face is even more like that horrible.
Crinkled up like.
That is it. That, you know what? That is kind of like, why is that there? That is a worse line.
That's my cut it out and my worst line.
Cut it out and your worst line. Retract that.
The visual and the audio. Done.
Oh, I'm trying to think of something that I would like definitely consider to be like one of the worst lines in the film itself. You know what it's got to be? It's got to be that the guy doing the commercial for the hairpiece.
And he jumps in.
And he like jumps in the pool and he's all like, this is a quality toupee. You can get this from anywhere. You can get it from me. But it's him doing either the commercial or him constantly following Robert De Niro's character going like, I want my money. I want my money. I want my cut. I want my cut. It's like, okay, dude, calm down. You need to go. No, I want my cut. No, fuck him. Fuck him and his.
And like, do you not know who you're talking to? Like, that's
right. Like, you need to like chill. This is why you get an ice pick in the back of the head.
Yeah. At least you don't get shot just for, you know, saying F you to.
Yeah, it's just one of those things where it's not like even like it's a bad line. It's just annoying. So
yeah.
It becomes a bad line. Like, he is that character that I think he's the only character that I'm kind of like, I'm okay with you dying in this film. Like, it doesn't bother me.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's kind of like Joffrey in Game of Thrones. Like, when
Oh, whoa, spoiler alert!
If no one has seen Game of Thrones by this point. Yeah,
at this point.
You should know. There's been enough memes. So yeah, we really, really like this film. It's a good movie. I can't remember. Did I talk about the lawsuit that was brought against?
No, you didn't.
Okay, so Frank Severo, who plays Frankie Carbone, he's the guy who's found in the meat locker. He was suing Fox in like 2014, 2015, I can't remember exactly the date, for $250 million, okay? Because they're saying that his likeness was used in The Simpsons. Now, if anybody watches The Simpsons, they know that there is the mafia character, Fat Tony. And Fat Tony always has these two guys who follow him. And it's the guy who has like that perm look and hair, which looks remarkably like Frankie Carbone in Goodfellas.
Funny thing about animation is that they take from real life and they do kind of,
they're going
you know,
to adapt it. They're going to change it. Now, they say that it's just completely coincidental, you know, and it was ruled by a judge that the lawsuit is not going to go in his favor because the character itself is so, like, different regardless of similarities. It's a cartoon.
Yeah, he doesn't have yellow skin.
He doesn't have four fingers. And, you know, he doesn't live in, you know, Springfield.
Oh, wherever. My God. What if in the courtroom he lifted up his hand and there's only four fingers and the judge is like, crap, that was good. So, I did not see that coming. Four fingers, you get $200 million.
$250 million. But Frankie Severo actually tried to reapply the lawsuit this year in 2018. And, you know, the state of California is like, no.
Yeah.
No, stop this. Stop it.
You're wasting time.
Get like the water bottle
money.
Down. Down after.
Cesar Milan. Pinching the dog. No. No.
Oh, man. Okay. So, you know, we're kind of coming down to the point where we have had a good time talking about, you know, 1990s, Goodfellas.
Hope you did too.
This was a lot of fun. And guys, honestly, we are feeling the love with some of these reviews that we got from
five stars
from some very, very awesome people. You know, we got one from the Cinematically Correct podcast, who told us that listening to this podcast, I feel like I'm listening to some big time celebrity podcasters. Their sound is amazing, the movies they pick are perfection, and the humor and banter they have is just so unbelievably fun, you would think it had to be scripted.
Oh, hold on, sorry, I'm on page 12. Where are you at?
Let me just... Sorry.
No, I'm just kidding. Yes, we're so scripted, I like the compliments.
This is a fun and very, very fun compliment.
I love five-star reviews. I love...
They think we're professionals.
I know. Just because we have a microphone and a recording, some recording equipment, they're like, you're so talented. And like, no.
We're the best.
But we really do appreciate these five stars.
We really, really love it. Another review that came in was from Two Girls on a Bench podcast, which they're some really fun ladies. They're out of L.A. They're both writers.
I like L.A.
It's a good place.
It is.
Yeah. You know, they say that you can't go wrong with Drew and Nathan. They have super funny tangents. See, they appreciate our tangents.
Ah,
and
they're probably some of the few.
Hilarious but factual info and an overall energy you can't beat. You'll find yourself laughing along, enjoying their reviews, and even seeking out movies to rewatch or to check out for the first time. You know, they enjoy cool shows like Pushing Daisies and are fans of Santa Clarita Diet, or at least. And they have a taste that we admire. And they are looking forward to new episodes. So you know what, guys? Thank you, Cinematically Correct Podcast and Two Girls on a Bench. Guys, if you want to go out and try and find their shows, you know, look them up on iTunes and Podbean as well. There's some great people out there. Guys, thank you so much for joining us for 1990s Goodfellas.
It was a good fella. It was a good time. I felt like
don't be a wise guy.
I felt like fellas with the good fellas.
Oh, it was a good fellas. Guys, coming up next time when we see you, it will be the 4th of July.
That's my flute of independence.
So, you know, we're going to be coming to you with a very special 4th of July movie, and all I can say is, welcome to Earth.
Oh, my gosh.
If that doesn't...
I don't even know how we could have picked something else. I mean, besides, like, some of the more...
There's some
cliche,
other movies.
There's cliche, like, yeah.
There's cliche, like, but beach and summer movies.
Our first time, like...
Doing the 4th of July.
Yeah.
I don't know.
We got to celebrate Independence Day with Independence Day.
So, guys, we hope that you join us for a good 4th of July celebration and watching Independence Day.
I'm already excited.
This is good stuff. So, hey, don't forget to find us on Facebook and Twitter. Look up The Real Feels Podcast. Be sure to send us an email at realfeelspodcast@gmail.com. And, of course, those five-star reviews.
Five stars.
Landing gear. All right, guys. Thank you for joining us. And remember, you're the realest.
And the feelest. Later. Let's go.
I know I'd go from rags to riches if you would only say you care. And though my pocket may be empty, I'd be a millionaire. My clothes may still be torn and tattered.